When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi there, and thanks once again for listening to the Explaining History podcast. And today we're going to talk about the defeat of the British and their Dominion partners, Australia and New Zealand, in Greece in 1941, and the impact that the German invasion of Greece has on the wider war. Now, in the last few podcasts on this topic, we've talked about how the Mediterranean had become the centre of operations, particularly for the British from the summer of 1941 through to the summer of 1940, I beg your pardon, through to the spring of 1941. It was a place where Churchill felt that he could still offer fight to the enemy, and it was also a place where Mussolini saw potential for rapid expansion at low cost to him and low risk to Italy. Mussolini was wrong in this regard and was almost universally defeated and routed, and obviously draws in his Axis partner Hitler into the bargain. Hitler was not initially interested in the Balkans. They were going to be an afterthought following the defeat of Russia, but as soon as Hitler saw that by waging war in the Mediterranean and invading Albania and Greece, that he, Mussolini, would then attract the attention of the British, and the British might, in a defeat of Mussolini in Greece, gain a foothold in the Balkans. Hitler sees this as an unacceptable risk and pours his time and energy and troops into the Balkans to support Mussolini. The Germans invade Greece on the 6th of April 1941. They justify this by stating that the British presence in Greece is enough to warrant an expulsion of them from Greek soil. German propaganda at the time couched the German invasion as an extension of the war with Great Britain, not an attack on the Greek people. But it would be the Greeks that would suffer from Hitler's actions far more than the British ever would. The Greek disaster was set in chain by Winston Churchill in part, and it had huge implications for North Africa as well. By withdrawing troops from North Africa and transferring them, these are mainly Anzac troops, transferring them to Greece, some of the most important fighting forces needed to hold Libya against a resurgent Axis attack under Rommel had been withdrawn. And at this point, Britain's supply lines are perilously long, and Britain has that problem that all powers in the North African theatre had, of this kind of elastic warfare, where they would become overextended and have to fall back. It was a double error on Churchill's part to reinforce Greece. In reinforcing Greece and sending British troops to Greece, it not only attracted the attentions of Germany, but the numbers of troops that were sent were insufficient really to deal with the German onslaught. Mainly German troops came from the now conquered Yugoslavia via Monastir, into northern Greece, but some came from Bulgaria. And once again, the British and their dominion forces were faced with superior air power. Now, there's an interesting pattern emerging here. Britain's major evacuations of the war, Norway, Dunkirk, and soon to be Greece, were all part of the same kind of process, whereby the British underestimated their enemy. They underestimated the impact of enemy artillery and enemy air power. The coordination of German forces and the ability of Germany to maximise its use of force by making sure that artillery, armour, infantry and air power worked in synchronisation with one another overwhelmed isolated pockets of British, Australian and New Zealand troops. And this is, of course, to ignore what happened to the Greek army. The Greek army, Monastir in Yugoslavia, is near to the Albanian border, where the Greek army had obviously successfully occupied. And the fact that now tens of thousands of German troops were pouring over the border meant that the Greeks were in danger of being surrounded and cut off in Albania. And this was obviously potentially catastrophic. So there was a retreat of Greek troops from Albania. And there were, obviously they took with them large numbers of Italian soldiers whom they had taken prisoner. By this point, the occupation of Albania had exhausted the Greek army. The Greeks had fought spectacularly, competently and bravely against the Italians, but the process of occupying Albania throughout the winter had drained its resources. There was little transport. It was an army that used animal power, horses mainly, and foot soldiers. And so there was the war in Greece was going to require rapid motion and manoeuvre. It was going to require the ability to cut the Germans off at high speed. This is something the retreating Greeks didn't have. And obviously, long retreating columns of soldiers are delightful targets for the Luftwaffe, which strafe them mercilessly. It was clear by the end of the month that all was lost. The retreat had become an evacuation, and naval evacuations began from the ports of Rafino and Porto Rafti. The Peloponnese peninsula of the Greek mainland saw evacuations from Kalamata and Monevesia. The destination for these evacuated troops was Crete. And just as with Dunkirk, vast amounts of war material were lost. Staff cars, jeeps, lorries, stores, radios, specialist equipment, artillery was just dumped by the roadside. Getting the men out was seen as obviously much higher priority. Machine guns and mortars, which had been dragged along through the retreat, were also left as well. And this meant that Crete was going to be a lot harder to defend. And the soldiers who departed left with a deep sense of guilt and shame. There were several key memoirs about the Greek campaign of Anzac and British soldiers feeling immense regret and shame about leaving the Greeks to their fate at the hands of the Germans. 43,000 troops managed to escape and 11,000 were left behind. They were taken prisoner. The Greek Prime Minister, Alexandros Korizis, killed himself as a result of the shame of the defeat. And Greek soldiers were forced to surrender en masse. An even greater disaster was to befall the British on Crete, and the disaster was particularly acute because it seemed so profoundly avoidable. Lieutenant General Bernard Freyberg, who was the New Zealand commander who led the defence, fought bravely to defend the island, but made a critical mistake, allowing the Germans the opportunity to defeat the defending Anzac and British forces. On the 20th of May, the German Flieger Corps launched a paratroop assault on Crete. It was the Germans' most audacious and really last great parachute offensive of the war. So many German paratroopers were killed in the air and gunned down on the ground that it was believed by the British that they had all but won the battle. Hitler was shocked at the level of losses and personally shied away from ever again authorising a major parachute airdrop, and it would be really the Allies' turn in 1944, in D-Day, to mount it again. Anthony Beaver's observations on the fall of Crete are very interesting. His History of World War II is obviously an excellent tome. He points out that the target in the Mediterranean had initially been Malta. The German army and Kriegsmarine had looked to Malta to be an ideal island to seize in order to support the convoy route to North Africa. And they knew that the British in Malta would be able to disrupt resupply of the Africa Corps. But the Allied bases on Crete, which had been taken in November 1940, Crete had already been secured by the British then, were far more significant because it put the oil fields at Ploiești in Romania under bombing range for the first time. So taking Crete was really quite important. This is one of the reasons why Hitler wanted Mussolini to hold off on seizing the Dodecanese Islands. The occupation of Crete by Germany would mean that the Luftwaffe could also then bomb the Suez Canal and attack Alexandria, occupied by the British. So it was a real strategic chess piece in the heart of the Mediterranean. Both the British and Germans were aware that the only way to seize Crete was with an airborne assault. General de Flieger, Kurt Student, a very significant strategic planner and figure within the Hitler's war, who we'll return to, no doubt, who was the founder of the Flieger Corps, the German airborne troops, saw Crete as being the great testbed for airborne assaults. This is where it was going to be really a great laboratory for this kind of thing. He saw also that the Luftwaffe, having dropped an airborne army over Crete, would be able to restore some of its pride that had been wounded by the British in the Battle of Britain. And Goering agreed. Goering thought this was going to be a great way of salvaging part of his reputation. Student showed Hitler a plan to use the 11th Flieger Corps to take Crete. The Flieger Corps, then based on Crete, would be able to be used again to drop on Alexandria or Cairo when Rommel approached the Egyptian border, and this would essentially paralyse the British. Hitler could see quite presciently that this was going to involve heavy casualties and was sceptical. He did not want an invasion of Crete to delay the start of Barbarossa.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
There are some historians who have argued in the past that Mussolini's ventures into the Balkans and Greece and Hitler's subsequent support of them slowed down the start date of Barbarossa and ensured that Hitler got bogged down in the winter and was unable to have seized Moscow in sufficient time. This line of argument has become, shall we say, less well accepted or established in recent years, and the failure of Barbarossa was put down to a whole range of other factors that we'll talk about when we get there. But certainly, these all seem like diversions away from Hitler's primary purpose. But it's hard to underestimate the strategic importance of Crete. Crete for the British was a difficult island to defend. It was quite large. There were harbours which were ideally suited to shipping. There were airfields that could be seized. It was vulnerable to attack from the Axis powers flying from the Dodecanese Islands. And defending an island in general is always problematic because it needs to be resupplied mainly by sea. And so if you have an enemy that has ample aircraft in the area and to some extent dominates the skies in the eastern Mediterranean, it can bomb your ships. The British, using ultra intercepts from Bletchley Park, began to identify quite early on, at the end of March, that there was a build-up of students, 11th Flieger Corps, which included the Fallschirmjäger 7th Parachute Division. In mid-April, another factor emerged. 250 transport aircraft had been transported as well, and this was to Bulgaria. The major airborne operation that had been predicted seemed to be in the planning phase, and it looked like that Crete would be the target, and this was going to be the German really gamble for the Suez Canal. The intercepts that Ultra managed to capture in that week started to spike and then began to rise as you reach the first week of May, which strongly indicated that Crete was the target. The British, as I mentioned earlier, were well aware that probably the job could only be done by an airborne assault, and this was guaranteed almost by the fact that the Royal Navy are too strong in the Eastern Mediterranean in order to, which would make an amphibious attack almost impossible. The first commander of the island, Brigadier Tidbury, has taken and done careful reconnaissance of the likely drop zones, airfields at Heraklion, Raithmino and Malemi. And this meant that there was going to be a concentration of force around all of these sites. It only took one complacent commander to allow one of these landing sites to fall into enemy hands, and that's exactly what happens. During the 6-month occupation of Crete, Churchill had demanded that the island be turned into a fortress, but this doesn't occur. This was in part due to muddled thinking at the highest echelons, the island being part of Wavell's overall responsibilities, but the island being kind of an example of imperial overstretch. There are so many points that need to be reinforced from Persia all the way to Greece that the British now occupy or control, that it becomes possible to see Crete as an irrelevance and or low down the list of priorities, even though Churchill is demanding that it be reinforced. The point is that Churchill would, in a given working week, demand an awful lot about an awful lot. And the way in which Churchill envisaged things was often different from the realities on the ground. Freyberg reached Crete on the 29th of April, quite late in the day. He waited until the last moment of the evacuation in Greece to make sure that his men got away. He was very close to Churchill, and Churchill admired him immensely, and had seen him in action at Gallipoli years before, during the First World War. Almost as soon as he arrives, Wavell basically tells Freyberg that he wants him to stay in Crete and command the defence of the island. Freyberg was not really happy about the news, and also very unhappy when he hears that there's very little air cover available. Freyberg himself was much more sceptical about the ability of the Royal Navy to stop a seaborne invasion. And curiously enough, it is there that Freyberg's attention is focused on the seaborne side of things, instead of thinking about the airborne invasion that he'd already been informed about. Wavell was convinced, as the signals intelligence from London had shown him, that the Axis weren't coming by sea, that they didn't have the strength to do so, so it must be an airdrop. And this misunderstanding by Freyberg was going to influence how he placed his forces and what he placed his attention on. The troops under his command were referred to as Cree Force, or Crete Force, and the British were defending the airfield at Heraklion, along with an Australian battalion. The airfield at Rethymno was also covered by two battalions of Australian troops and two Greek regiments. But Malimi in the west, which actually turned out to be the main objective of the Germans, had a small New Zealand battalion to defend it. And Freyberg was convinced that the amphibious assault would come on the coast west of Chania, and Malimi is the weak point for the entire operation, and it is the most important point as far as the Germans are concerned. Seizing that airfield means everything. An ultra decrypt on the 6th of May showed that two divisions were going to be landed by air, which was more than twice as many troops as Wavell had predicted. The communications and details of the German plan were decoded, and it became clear that the main effort was an airborne assault. But military intelligence in London had mistaken the increase in the number of reserves being transported by sea on the second day. Perhaps this was a deliberate ploy by Germany. But Freyberg also imagined that there might be an amphibious landing with tanks, which was purely something that he had imagined, nothing that he'd been told. So part of this is a story of failed communications and failed intelligence analysis. Intelligence flights taking reconnaissance photos over Crete by the Germans had failed to spot a lot of British positions, and the overconfidence that Germany had had with so many easy victories led large numbers of German airborne troops into a killing ground. as it's appeared that the Germans had come for the airfields, the Freiburg chose not to crater them or sabotage them in any way. The attack that came on the 20th of May was a massacre for the German parachutists. They were rained with fire from Australian, New Zealand and British troops, and very few prisoners were taken. Freiburg once again missed an opportunity to bring in artillery that was pointed at the sea, that was positioned at the coastline, to turn it round and use it against the attackers, obsessed as he was with a seaborne invasion accompanying the airborne attack. The British and Dominion troops were hampered by poor communications, so the brigade at Heraklion had no idea until halfway through the day, at 2:30, that an invasion had begun on the west of the island. A day of heavy fighting ended as night fell, and the German troops began to take stock of the devastation of their forces. Kurt Student, based in Athens, began to get reports of how disastrous it had been. He also heard that only the airfield at Malmi could still be seized. There was a great deal of pressure to pull the entire operation. But it was another blunder by Freiburg that handed the Germans victory. He cabled Cairo, saying that he was certain that the three airfields held, along with two harbours. And it was the fact of the matter was that Malmi was not secure. It had only been lightly defended at the start, and the battalion that had survived there was unable to counterattack the German troops that were dug in at the airfield. And the requests for reinforcements for the counterattack were ignored, and that meant that the Germans held Malmi and they held it intact. This was a disaster. The most experienced pilot that Student had was sent on a test landing to the airfield at first light. When the pilot returned and said that he hadn't come under direct fire, other transport aircraft were dispatched to take ammunition to the occupiers of the Malmi airfield and to evacuate some of the wounded. Students suddenly saw that this was the back door into Crete and gathered together as many troops as he could. The 5th Mountain Division was flown out and sent every available reserve from the 7th Fallschirmjäger Division to be dropped near Malmi. And so unfolds the fall of Crete before long Malmi became the conduit for thousands and thousands of fresh German troops to pour onto the island, and within 1 week, Crete was lost. As with so many of the early stages of Britain's war, this was an avoidable disaster. The idea that Germany was an unstoppable war machine and simply undefeatable as a result of some Teutonic fighting spirit or organisation is a bit of a nonsense, really. Many of the disasters that befall the British are of their own making. They're not to do with the fact that their enemy is unstoppable or indestructible, as people in Britain and Britain's forces were starting to fear at the time. It was to do with the fact that strategic blunders were made and intelligence errors and obviously and assumptions, partly political assumptions, partly military assumptions, were made in 10 Downing Street and on the ground in the field that made gifts to the Germans. Anyway, we shall continue our exploration of the Second World War in the next few weeks. We'll be starting to look at Russia and Barbarossa. So I hope you'll continue listening, and do remember to visit us at the Explaining History Facebook page and say hi, give us a hello, and let us know what you're thinking. And also, if you can give us a nice write-up on iTunes, that would be grand. Thanks very much. All the best. Bye-bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.